The pivot position in the navigators is the area representative. He is the man through whom our ministry is fulfilled in every sense of the word. There may be other men doing parts of the nav ministry, doing parts of the responsibility of an area rep. But when we think, and I think from what Lauren has said and other leadership, when we talk about the area rep, he is the key man in our position. And maybe you've seen Skip's organizational chart. Oh, no. Let's do the best we can. Got DM here. Man becomes a DM, and then after that he becomes a team leader. I think Sparks in Britain and Europe calls that an LDM, but anyway, we call him a team leader, and becomes a CP, contact point, an area rep. And man, that's it right there. That's a key man. If he gets too many years, isn't too successful, then we make an RD out of him, and then DD, and president, if excuse me, then you go on down from there. So, truthfully, I think once a guy has the privilege of carrying a contact point and area rep, particularly area rep responsibility, that he has a choice position, the one that in God's leading and grace, if we get to carry, then probably the most privileged and most opportune position we can get into. The navigator's objective, which Brad had us review, to help fulfill Christ's great commission by making disciples and developing disciples in all nations, is to be carried out primarily by the area representative, because he is involved in every part of our objective. And that objective is to be carried out in an area, by an area representative, while he develops ministries in all available pools of manpower, that is military, collegiate, layman, or high school, or you could say other, there are others. And so when we think of an area representative, we think of a man who is in an area, and that all people in that area are fair game. And if he can decide that there's a recruitable pool of manpower there, then he should be developing a ministry there. And so we hear about running two railroads and a trucking line. And then you want to throw a high school ministry in on that. You could say he also should have a short haul air transportation system. So that's kind of the man that we're talking about. And I thought it might help us to really come to a more clear picture of what an area rep is if we take out a piece of paper and jot down the distinctives of an area rep as opposed to a contact point. That is, compare and contrast the responsibilities of a contact point as opposed to an area rep. And I'd like to suggest that why don't you break into threes. And if you can get someone from another division, fine. In fact, if you want to walk around and, Jim, maybe you'd want to get over here with some of these guys over here. And why don't you just do that right now? Why don't you get together and we'll take a minute and just jot down the responsibilities of a contact point and compare and contrast with an area representative. And in some cases, of course, there'll be the same responsibilities, but there'll be a difference in intensity, in complexity between these two. So if you could do that right now, I'd appreciate it. Right. Now, I realize that you weren't able to finish that, but I felt it might be good for us to begin to get a clear distinction between area representative and contact point, and where the responsibilities are different in type, where they differ in complexity, or where they are different in just the volume that a person has or the amount that he does. So let's share some of the things that you feel are significant differences between contact point and a representative. See, Dan, would you come up with?
Well, personally, another group is their responsibility to develop staff.
Okay. Good. I see, David, you had something?
It seemed like the area rep has more of a responsibility to develop geography, whereas the contact point, he zeroes in on one campus, whereas the area rep might go to high school, couples, you know, lay couples, and police.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, other distinctions?
The area rep would be preparing and consulting and preparing career plans.
You bet. Okay, that's true.
Area rep will generally have contact point or two that you supervise.
Yeah, that's a tremendous difference. You're not going to have a contact point supervising contact points. Yeah, that's a giant difference, I'd say. All right. Anyone have another thing you want to mention on your list? Do you feel it's...
Isn't the contact point more or less demonstrating
that
you can do and have you demonstrate something?
Right.
It is named as a demonstrator.
Right. Right. Okay, very good. And demonstrate to his own satisfaction as much as anyone else that he can do it. Dan?
Well, the contact point is responsible simply to an area rep, whereas a rep is both responsible and available almost to the navigator.
All right. Very good. Yeah, I think we have a policy that we don't send anyone but area reps overseas, so that's where that comes from.
Seems like he has...
Probably depends a little bit on our selection of who we put in contact point. It might vary from place to place, but it is possible for a fellow to at least get that sealed in contact point if he doesn't have it before he comes in. Have you, David, have you been involved in areas where, say, a fellow goes in and he's not sure?
Yeah. We have one contact point that's sure.
Right. Okay.
It seems like if the man becomes an area rep, he's got to have that
call. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, very good. Anything else, Bruce?
By the nature of his activities and extent, the area rep becomes more involved in PR.
Oh, tremendous. Yeah, right. You said more involved. The contact point has to be somewhat involved. It's got to relate to, and it's sort of the immediate area, I suppose, wouldn't you say? Yeah. Okay, that's tremendous. All right, I had a few other things jotted down that may be part of what you said. Like the contact point, he should be demonstrating in a grassroots ministry. He himself should be involved in a disciple-making ministry for his own welfare, as well as for being a pace sitter in the ministry for his area. And it's very easy to organize yourself out of the grass, out of the ministry. You become a manager and supervisor, and if you've ever done that, you'll soon begin to dry up inside, and personally, I think it's very unhealthy. But it sure knocks your demonstrating what we're trying to produce. And it does seem like an area rep might have a smaller personal ministry than a contact point, especially a new contact point where he is the ministry team, and the ministry is done as he does it. Developing girls workers, That'd be in the same category as developing new staff. But if it's not a thing he looks at and wants to do, then he might miss on it. Developing financial support for the worldwide work of the navigators. And from what we've heard here, I think that's become even a greater responsibility of the area rep. Not just for his own area and his division and so on, but actually we're going to have to shoulder more of the load for our overseas works. And then one that may not have been mentioned is help the RD plan, evaluate, and so on in the region. Now that may vary according to the RD and your divisional director and so on, how you organize, but it may be that the RD will call on his area reps far more. I don't know how you guys do out there, Dan, but you may get involved with Stevens far more than your contact points do. So, Jerry?
I have my area reps meet periodically to classify, to discuss people, to discuss career plans, to evaluate, and so that they will be involved much more, in my thinking, than both the candidates.
Yeah.
I'll share a lot more with them.
Right. All right, there are probably many other responsibilities that we could list, but we'll better press on. Yeah. Fine, Scott, right now.
The first one, the area rep responsibility is to develop staff.
Uh-huh.
I think I understand that means that it's not his only responsibility.
No.
In fact, what we're saying is that his job is not just to develop staff.
Right.
You're going to take it out.
Right. How would you answer that?
Well, one of the things you said was that the contact point is more involved in grassroots. So you put that on the other side of the area, that's like he is involved in grassroots ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So he is doing more than involved in
staff.
What we were trying to say, I think, is that the maximum we will hold the contact point accountable for is disciple makers. This is disciple makers.
Right. Really, he's in a key position to do that. Organizationally and geographically, he's the best man in the organization to do it. He's close enough to the grass, and he's got team leaders, DMs, LDMs coming up. Also, he's got contact points a few miles away. He's the closest guy around and in the grass to do that.
In other words, an RD has, say, 10 areas, and six of them or seven of them are contact points, and three of them are area reps. And the RD is going to lean on the area reps to supervise and actually develop the staff. In that sense. Is that what?
That's the way I understand it. You have other feeling on that? I think it's important that we be willing to assume that responsibility as an area rep. Because an RD is not going to train and help that much. Brad?
With a few exceptions, most contact points will become area reps.
Yeah.
And so the area reps are developing for the benefit of that.
I think we'll get to that when we talk about developing PCPs and contact points, maybe Friday. We'll probably get into that more. David?
Can I ask one question? Just the intensity, maybe the difference in intensity between the area rep and the contact point in the grassroots. Like, okay, the contact point, he's meeting with a few disciple makers, and he's you know, he's following up maybe three or four new Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And he's maybe a couple of guys who are disciples. Now, the area rep, I guess we need to put him in the center of control there. Should he have someone there who's following up brand new Christians?
Yeah. I think it's just simply he finds a means for evangelism. By God's grace, he leads people to the Lord. He follows them up and disciples them. Somewhere or another, in all the flurry of everything else going on. So he personally stays engaged in the Great Commission.
Jordan, would you consider a good time to back on a base ministry or a college campus to assign somebody as a team leader? And do you ever, as a year, have to go back out yourself? Submit yourself under him. You're not really under, but you are going to
ministry
with him.
Right.
You don't take over.
No.
It's his team.
Right.
You go out of evangelism with him, in one sense. You still let him be the team leader.
Right. Exactly.
But you go out with him.
Yeah, I'd go out with him, but I don't think I'd sit in a lot of their meetings or be under, you know, because that makes it real tough on your team leader.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And also, I tell the guys, if I'm going out with him, I want to go out with the key men. I
don't
want to be filled with new guys.
Right. Yeah, so I think it's a good illustration. You got to be able to do more than one thing at a time, juggle more than one ball, or you can't survive.
Yeah.
I don't think you survive the Christian life. You know, so you got to have some grassroots over here and be evaluating guys on the job and then seeing how your leaders are doing and all at one time.
Do you have any idea? Or just a span of control. I guess it would depend on the individual. Let's say, I'm meeting with some DMs, disciples, and then I've got a new guy following up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing I'm finding is that I'm getting stuck, you know, right on that campus, and I'm not doing an effective job of contact. So I guess you got to figure out what your span of, what your capacity is.
Yeah. It's why don't we get into that in terms of the how you organize, how you plan, how you schedule, and I think we'll get into that in just a little bit. In fact, why don't we move along now and keep that in mind. If you'll flip over to the Roman numeral 3, a lot of the first couple of pages, Brad covered on our means of evaluating and trying to see where the ministry is. In that part 3, you develop area ministry plan or develop your strategy for your area. We said, simply stated, an area ministry plan is the application of appropriate resources to the greatest opportunities. That is probably the key. Being able to evaluate your resources as to where we are, and Brad talked a lot about that, and then trying to discern what are the opportunities, where should we start, what's first, and put priorities on opportunities. And that's the area rep's responsibility, because you know, you've got hopefully there's a base somewhere not too far away. There are probably a college campus or two of different types around. You probably got young laymen and college couples. And then, of course, high schools. And there are pools of manpower. But the area rep has to have the promises and calling of God and the vision that God has given him to see those as opportunities. And to see how they can be exploited or developed. So why is it so important that he first consider resources before setting his opportunities or deciding on opportunities? That's right, boy. You can't use men you don't have. You can't make team leaders out of guys that are, you know, young disciples. That's right. So our vision, you know, and I hope that somehow our guys that I'm with, occasionally ask him, what do you envision your area to become, your ministry to become, 2 or 3 years down the road? What do you envision it to become? And boy, that's where we soar, and we see the big picture, and as it plugs into God's strategy for the world and all of humanity. Then we drop down and face reality as to who are your DMs and who are your disciples and who are your resources. And then a plan, a strategy to have the right men, right time, right place, and so on, to bring those two together so that that thing can grow. In this same area here, the basis of ministry objective is a combination of area vision and promises, and that there's where you get the reality, the evaluation of resources. And we must have an accurate evaluation of where the ministry is before we can decide how far in the next ministry period we can expect to progress. A ministry period being a school year or in a military work, maybe a year or some, depending on where you are, your periods, where you initiate the ministry and then evaluate and so on. And in an area, of course, you have guys who are co-laboring with you and under your training, they're team leaders, and they assume responsibility for carrying out part of the objectives. And so if we're going to produce 20 new disciples this next ministry period, and I've got 3 team leaders, then those team leaders ought to decide how much of that objective is theirs. And of course, they've been in on it, so it's pretty obvious to them. They've helped write the objective. So right down the line, the team leaders assume responsibility. Then part 3, written into the objectives, are these midpoint, quarter point times for evaluation. And that is very important. I feel if we're not achieving our objectives, and we can make adjustments in activities and emphasis and so on if it's soon enough. And if it's not soon enough, then we sort of have to live with what we've got. So the rep has to apply resources to opportunities. And here's how Denny's area situation, pretty much as it is now, he's got resources and opportunities all over up there. Why don't you pick out titles as to who would we call resources on that organizational chart for his area? Who are some resources?
Hastings.
Yeah, Hastings is a resource. Team leader?
Yeah, all your team leaders.
All team leaders. Okay. Of course, Hal himself.
Yeah.
And it's when you don't have a guy to do the job, you got to do it yourself. Or in this case, see where we've got it projected. We thought we had a guy, but we're putting him someplace else. So Hal couldn't do that too. So we're not doing it, but it is projected soon. Now, I think it's important to look at an opportunity in light of our navigator objective. Have you ever had an opportunity to minister to a situation or in a situation in which probably no disciples would come out of? Can you think of an opportunity like that? What would it be?
What about this high school? We have a high school opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see the possibility of
any discussion. Mm-hmm. All right, I'd say it's your evaluation of it as an opportunity. And I think eventually we'll see how it is.
What's the purpose of looking for an opportunity?
Yeah.
The purpose of an opportunity?
Say
it's a food for what?
Right.
Do I consider a church an opportunity? And mm-hmm. Do I seek an opportunity in light of making disciples? Or mm-hmm. It's not an opportunity if I don't look at it.
Right, okay, there you go. That's part of the criteria whether it's an opportunity or not from a navigator point of view. There may be social needs and, you know, there's other types of ministry, child evangelism and the people on Skid Row and so on, but pretty much they're not a pool of recruitable manpower. We can't envision them becoming responsible men of God overseas as, you know, as often as we might see in a collegiate or military situation. So I think the point is that you look for an opportunity where we can make an investment, and not long after the investment begins to mature, it becomes itself an opportunity. So if I'm going to spend time in a pool of manpower, or our guys are, then it, down the road it has to begin to produce people who are resource as well as opportunity. So in one sense, we're all opportunity, we're all resource, because we're channels through whom the Holy Spirit works. Hendrickson helped us last night, and we're an opportunity for Hendrickson's ministry, and they have leadership to minister to us. But they don't want it to be dead end, do they? No more than we want to spend weeks and months and years with a guy and not see him reproduce as a resource. So the application of resources to opportunities, and then seeing that become then a resource to be invested back in someplace else. And then in a situation like Harold's, where you have, say we've got a fairly strong collegiate arm of the work. In some areas we've got a very strong military part of the work. Other areas of the area haven't been developed. Then what we can do is take resources out of this situation and apply them in up to other opportunities and cross over resources. We got an illustration of that. In the last 2 weeks we had two rallies, two different team leaders who are developing teams among young couples. In their pool of manpower, we've developed criteria for developing what a pool of manpower is in apartment complexes. And Hal sent a team up to entertain and serve at the rallies, because you've got three or four couples on this training team, and they do all the recruiting and get all the people there. Then if it takes all of them to serve the thing, then they don't get to minister with the people. And so we're crossing over resources. And an area rep has the resources to do that and should be creative in how to do that. Any questions? Bruce?
How do you distinguish between opportunity and activities?
Right.
Well, they're not a target, there wouldn't be an opportunity for them. But it's an activity that I'm going to evaluate whether it's valuable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I just look at it in terms of a PR responsibility and to minister to the other works in the body of Christ.
Right. Yeah. I may not be able to make disciples out of that.
No, right, right.
But it is an opportunity.
Right. That is true. And you may, you know, there may be one person in that group that really responds, and you could really help them and somehow get them out of it. God, we're in that. There is another thing, though. You see, Abad was sharing how the person's gifts and strengths and calling must match up with the navigators and so on. Suppose you were an excellent speaker, and it got to the point where you were traveling all over the countryside. Well, as a navigator, you don't have that privilege. Maybe on your own time, you could, but not as a navigator. Hal, Jeff?
I was going to say the two factors in it would be priority, and also in taking someone with you, he's your opportunity to minister to him.
Yeah. All right, take your own guy. That's what Leroy does. He'd take us along and preach to us, and the church or whoever was around would get the side effect. That's right, Raj. That's right. And boy, an area rep has to be willing to do that. And that's an adjustment for us. We hate to get out of the barracks. We hate to get out of the dorms. It's as hard as sometimes the grassroots may, you know, get up and get out on that cold. But being willing to assume that responsibility, I think, is an adjustment for us. But an area rep has to do it. I think one of Joy's and I's our greatest adjustments is not to have our own little gang that you have that deep, deep heart relationship with that you've seen come from conversion, and boy, that's hard to leave. Okay, after you've evaluated resources, you've decided on opportunities or pools of manpower to penetrate, then you've written objectives, then organize your resources to do the work, your people. And that's what, of course, an organizational chart does. Just decide division of labor and and delegation of responsibility and accountability as well. And in this case, you can see how that we have a ministry which is collegiate. It deals with young couples who are in training. It deals with couples who are not in training, who are older and have another relationship, as well as career DMs, or however you wish to title those people. We hope to have a high school ministry very soon, and then he has one contact point that he's supervising. And Hal has to put all that together and make it work.
I'm a little proud of that organizational chart, because it looks like you've got 20 people reporting to you now. When you figure all the relationships, and I know that doesn't make sense.
And well, I've got
you explain that to me.
Right.
How do you train 20 people?
I don't. I've got those three team leaders, 14 leaders there that you see on the poster this week. Contact point, the girl worker, and in the career girl worker, Sherry Randall, on the about a monthly basis. But she reports to Ellen Ashton. And then these others are grassroots ministry, the young couples training team, it's not really a team. But those are really follow-up Bible studies that I have there. Campus and non-campus.
So what is your span of control, Hal? About 8? 10?
Well, I figured out it's about 7 to 8.
Mm-hmm. But there's a variation as to the intensity of how much you're involved
right.
with some of those?
See, the career couples, there is once or twice a month. And so when you get into the ministry quality of us over there, the intensity is much, much less than there is under the collegiate and young couples.
In other words, all the people for which you are a team leader, all you do is have occasional Bible study, but you don't
right.
spend any man time on it.
I have one in the couples that I spend man time with.
What we hope to develop, and are in other places, develop team leaders out of those grassroots ministries. So he would hopefully come up with a team leader, or we'll shift another guy to him.
See, if I have team leaders in there, my center control would be 9.
Yeah, I was just saying, if you plug in more team leaders, his center control is even wider, and it seems to be more difficult.
That's true.
See, now, next year, in order to, it'll be completely different, because I'll probably have one man on the WFU campus that reports to me, maybe two, and the others will report to that one or two guys. I'll cut my span of control on the campus. That's what I have to work out. And
yeah, you just have to reorganize. And I think, David, you kind of put your finger on that. You have to reorganize to get the job done. Change.
I'd like to ask why you have the girls worker placed in that particular position. She looks like either a secretary or an advisor or something other than someone who's doing grassroots ministry.
How would you, why'd you put her up there?
She's an advisor and for the career girls down there. That's the main reason I put her out there, rather than the other place I may have put her. See, she's advisor also for each of the team leaders in the collegiate ministry. And she meets man-to-man with the girl assistants under the on campus ministry.
But she isn't leading the team?
She is one of the assistants. And she meets with the other two assistants. See where you see team leader, other Oaks. Okay, she's the girl assistant under Oaks.
And she is leading the team.
She's leading the team there. And she meets with the girl assistant, the two girl assistants. And the career girl team leader.
But she had two bosses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Or Ben?
In the case of the guys with women's ministry, co-labor is just a local term. Do we have a definition for it?
I don't know if I have a hand or not. Ministry co-laborers are contacts who are looking to the NAVS for direction and help, but due to age, calling, or other circumstances, do not feel led or qualified to train with a young couple's training team or to train with the NAVS. These people are involved in a navigator-type ministry of evangelism and follow-up and have consented to give us their fruit, their young couples they recruit, when it's mutually agreed on all the way around. Dave Grissom, and then right, and Metering has. We have a college sophomore in our work now that he followed up, led to Christ, followed up, that kind of thing. But we're doing it. It happens, but we're doing it, trying to do it on purpose. Jerry, do you have another thought? Any other questions or comments?
Would it be right to say that now that although your spend and control seems like large, but at this time, two or three levels, the one level you have the team leaders in the contact point,
right.
And on the second, a different level, you may have another spend of four or five.
Right.
I had five actually on before on a team leader level in one contact point, which is more of a supervised point. I find it, and the thing that strikes me out is the diverse types of people that could adjust couples in the same way. But I'm not in really much grassroots with singles. My grassroots is with couples. It's really couples keeping together.
Do you meet with any of those couples on an individual basis?
One regularly each week, or two, one each week, two every other week.
Okay, we'll touch on some of these things you're mentioning now as we get into scheduling and evaluating. If we could turn on over in your pages to Part C, where it says Plan Area Schedule. Now, you may involve your contact point or points with you in all the steps of developing your ministry for training, but I think it is, at least from my point of view, important not to involve him in your area of ministry, because obviously we want him to have the freedom and liberty to develop his own ministry, so we don't want to tie him up in a close organizational tie. It's also, I think, important, and I'm sure you do this, is involve your leadership in all the processes. Maybe after your objectives are pretty well formulated in your own mind, then begin to share and involve your young leadership with you in that, so they can see that stuff develop and be in on it. Well, in planning the area schedule, begin with priority number one or objective number one, and I think it's tremendous to sit around with your key guys and say, all right, now here's what God has laid on our hearts and we're praying about. Now, what activities shall we do to accomplish this. And it's the most important thing you're going to do that ministry period. So they can begin to assign, they'll say, well, man to man, of course, all right, training session, so on, and they decide what activities. Then you go to the next objective, which is second priority, and so on through your area objectives, and assign activities to each one. And, of course, you find pretty soon that some activities will run all through them. An area rally can accomplish quite a number of things. So after you've decided on the activities that are related to a particular objective, then you get into the schedule. And if you'll turn the page, you'll see exhibit number 5, which is the area rep schedule. Then the problem comes of plugging in all these terrific activities into a schedule, and you run into some reality, some hard things there. And if all we had to do is develop team leaders, well, we'd have a great time, you know, but we don't. And if all we had to do was just to evangelize and follow up and establish a broad base of contact, why, tremendous. We could pour all our resources into that in our time, but obviously you can't. And so you get into scheduling, and we've put together a little monthly schedule, and each of these lines is a week, it's a month. And so you begin to plug in your activities into a schedule on a weekly or a monthly basis. And of course, depending on the maturity of the area, you might do it on a weekly basis. But in some cases, you just have to stretch your week out to 2-week blocks and plan on a 2-week block. In some cases, just start with a month. But this is Hal's situation. For all, these are all of the area activities for the collegiate ministry. And I think it's good to keep in mind that each team leader, blocks of time that are not being used are his to develop his own activities in light of the objectives he has for his team. So these are area-wide activities that just collegians participate in. And you can see they're all put together on your page. Then he works with his ministry co-laborers, and not in this order particularly, but sometime he gets to them and decides what activities are best to help them continue to produce and develop, provides an environment for them. And then the same for these would be military or young couples or what other high school plugs in activities in the area that are for them. Now, can you see an activity that does more than one thing, that serves more than one ministry, that may accomplish more than one objective? What would that be? Seminars, right. How do you have everybody in the area can come to your, as long as they fill the prerequisites, can come to your Saturday morning seminar when you have it?
Right.
Okay. Now, so you have grandfathers and grandmothers, new babes, studying scripture memory, and they're all part of one area. Because maybe you gave them a worksheet to do, and they filled out, and they're ready, and so that helps.
Where it says Bible study prep in blue up there, does that mean that Hal is preparing to meet with his ministry
co-laborers
in a Bible study, or does that mean they are preparing their Bible study?
What's that mean, Hal?
No, that's their preparation.
You've
got another.
Yeah, here's what Hal's involved in personally. These little stars. Every place a star is means that Hal is personally involved in that activity. Questions? Problems? Got a problem?
Are you on your team leader Bible study?
Right.
That's each week. Now, you meet with your team leader Bible study when? What time is that?
8:30 in the morning.
And how long? Do you have a certain time? You meet for a length of time and cut it up.
Right.
And then you go into your planning after that.
Right.
And about how much time then do you cover in Bible study in the planning?
We did do 2 hours of Bible study. We cut that to 1.5 hours. And it's because of one of the guys' schedules. And then 2 hours of planning, which you can't run more than that.
You know, it says here that we wrote down that prime time, that is, you know, the best time for the best people, may be determined largely by the availability of those who are to participate. So this guy wasn't available. Also, when we get our young couple's training team leader underway, and if he's a part-time self-employed or whatever, or in most cases we find that about half-time as much as he can handle, that'd be another factor. Maybe nights would be better for him, or Saturday mornings.
Just a question on your personal schedule. I realize it's necessary activities, but do you schedule time with your family? Do you try and have so many evenings home?
Yeah, Tuesday evening is a family, usually a family night, unless my wife and I are going on the day off, which is rare. Then the weekends, we would usually get the Friday or Saturday evening as a family.
Now, I appreciate that you give us a rough idea of how many hours per week you sit here involved in eyeball with one other person, and how many hours a week you sit here on group Bible study.
Per week, probably 6 hours in small group Bible study discussion. Yes, Bible study discussion. 5 to 6 hours. Man to man per week. Roughly 10 to 12. I'm going to really stop for you that one. Personal Bible study, as far as really digging into the Word, it runs about 6 hours. Here and there, I have special projects, studies I'm working on, maybe for Ags or something. Planning, which I would say that time in the Word, of course, that's only Bible study, is what you ask.
Or intake time, Bible study, planning, prayer.
It's a different thing.
I tell you, in Exhibit 6, you do see Hal's weekly schedule, and we won't get to amounts of time, but at least you could get an idea of when he has scheduled various activities. If we wanted to take the time, originally I thought perhaps we could go ahead and write out our weekly schedule just to rethink it. But, and then compare it with Hal's just as, to bounce it off something else. Not that that's by any means an ideal schedule.
I had another question, and maybe you'll need to delay it, but what we're dealing with here primarily is the area rep's responsibility to develop, you know, in direct relation to our stated navigator objective, that is the production of the cycle maker.
Mm-hmm.
One other function, you know, our resources are men and money,
mm-hmm.
not just men.
Right.
And it's going to become more important, as I've been thinking through for some of our area reps, to be able to develop this broader base in the community in which he lives. Because
mm-hmm.
I see some reps who only relate to the people they minister directly to. And
right.
And I know Hal doesn't do that because I've known him for a long time. And he has got these people all over creation, you know, to get to know. And I'm wondering if somewhere we ought to discuss, especially in light of the things that, you know, we're preached to today, Scott Lee and all that.
Right, right.
The area rep's responsibilities and what he can do
uh-huh.
to do it. It seems that if we're going to do that, that the area rep has to be pulled out of the ranks a lot more than Cal is involved. You know, he's going to be pulled out of it. You know, he might meet with four men a week and that'll be it.
Well, my guess is we're kind of Cal scheduled out at lunch.
Well, that is. Mm-hmm. And that luncheon on Wednesday was part of that. And then, as our couples ministry is developing, I know something's not on up anymore, and that's, oh no, I'm sorry, okay, the rally on Friday. We will be having rallies for couples, which will be broad. It would really come under, really wouldn't come under the whole laborers, and the whole laborers would walk broader than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be part of that.
Sure, I mentioned what you're talking about is a little bit like PR, you know, speaking of businessmen's lunch, the city and sea lunch. It is a part of the stated job responsibility in terms of PR, but it's the type of thing.
And that probably as God leads, it's a new thing. We're just hearing it.
Yeah. Seminary rep will spend more than 100%. That development of that ministry coordinator.
Can Brad, would that be out of place to show this thing? All right.
That development of the ministry coordinator that's reading where my financial support comes in a lot. Big part of it. The ministry to very, very direct way.
One thing we've really failed our ministry in Michigan for a while is we have not ministered to we've not understood how to relate to, minister to, and receive the support from the Navier constituency. You couldn't put a handle on it. Well, so we worked a little bit on that, and obviously here's in the illustration, here's the world, and there are other parts and body in the body that are called to other functions and so on, but the NAVs have one pretty clear objective, and so in our case we put on the side, if it doesn't contribute to that objective, then we don't want to do it some way or another. So we've decided to try to the aims of the work are to establish clearly defined categories of relationships for all NAV contacts. And that's from the most distant NAV log person right on up to your team leaders and contact points. So we established clearly defined categories of relationships. And so we put people in categories depending on the type of relationship they have to us to provide appropriate ministry to navigator contacts in each category, depending on, try to decide, all right, what resources can we put into those? And then to utilize the various categories of navigator contacts as resource in the accomplishment of the NAV objective. So if we're going to minister in some way to people in these various relationships, which is less and less going out, still we want their contribution to be felt in terms of our objective. Now, one of the problems, if you just minister on a broad base, then training really suffers. If you major on training, the broad base suffers. And then you mix them together, and people say, well, it's all foggy to everyone. They don't know where to fit. And they don't have to fit any place other than where they want to fit, depending on what they'd like. But just so they can have an idea where you fit. Well, the same thing that Brad showed yesterday, the pipeline or the telescope illustration, just simply shows that where training fits into the whole picture. And in our case, these guys we're calling ministry co-laborers are doing the navigator-type basic ministry. NAV co-laborers are not. They may have donated their money, their kids, their equipment, but somehow they're working with the Gideons, they're highly involved in the church and so on. But these guys are doing evangelism, follow-up, and so our training, our pipeline pretty well extends out this far, and it'd be real foggy out this way. And so your input of contacts and evangelism is moving this direction. And ministry co-laborers are involved. A lot of these guys are not disciple makers. We like to help them, but they're not disciple makers. In some cases, they may never be in the strictest sense. But then, of course, here as a person progresses on out to become laborers for the harvest or NAV reps or contact point and so on. Well, then to try to tie it all together, relate it to so that ministry co-laborers know how they relate to these people in terms of ministry, that is, their production. We've done this. We've got these guys that are doing their businessmen, doing a ministry. Here's a realtor in Holland, Michigan. He leads a young couple of the Lord called Dave Grissen, or a guy. He follows Dave Grissen up, and he begins to disciple him. But at that point, because of many things, Percy Nienheist runs out of gas. But what he did was make him available to the NAVs, and the NAVs took him for a while and then took him down to the University of Illinois, then back to finish his contact point in Holland, Michigan. Then now he's in the Northeast with Lauren White in his contact point. Well, that is what I like to see happen over and over again. Thousands of times. I mean, I like to see it happen every place, and I don't see why it can't happen. And also, of course, some of the guys from our base or our campuses, our young couples who go to a certain point and it just seems like their career DMs or their gifts and calling doesn't seem to fit them to go on, but they can come out here and for Larry Van Meteren or somebody to oversee and take responsibility for these young guys on a loose basis, to me it spreads the responsibility around and puts it in the hands of people that can do it, and it keeps our resources spiraling or moving around this way and keeps us moving toward the objective. And this is where the money comes from. This is where the big amounts of men will come from, I think. Because we've got a broad base of contact, we can then involve parents for our students and guys in the military whose parents are at home and can be recruited and developed, as well as getting their high school seniors involved in that kind of thing. But an area rep is a key guy on that. Contact point shouldn't, and a RD can't. Now, of course, everything is evolving, and it was just at one point we kind of took a snapshot of how things are, and that's how they are pretty much now, but I'm sure we'll learn more about it. Any questions or comments or does that cross your philosophy of ministry in some way that you, in a serious manner, that you feel would hinder your ministry? Couples and individuals have gone out.
And where they are with other missions or with navigators or something like that. Fantastic. Well, in Michigan, there's hundreds of people that are involved giving to these people, and they're have friends. Now, maybe you're in a state where you don't have that many friends and co-laborers, but in Michigan, boy, I mean, you can't be very rough in Michigan and ignore the population, because there's thousands of people up there who are involved either in prayer or financial support or something. They're interested in having it work. So Gallaudet really has a big responsibility to the public, but he has a contact point, doesn't have it. And he's got to figure out, well, what do you do with co-laborers, just people who are giving and praying? What do you do with the ministry co-laborers who are doing our type of evangelism, our type of follow-up, and using our materials, and who really want to do our thing? But maybe they're too old or don't feel led to sell the business and move into Michigan State and get some training. So we've tried to sort out, what do we do with these people? What's going to be our relationship with them? How much will we involve them? What will we involve them in? And Warren and Al really sorted this out very effectively. How much time they spend with them, what do they do with them, and so forth. Here again, we're not talking about a manic contact point. We're talking about somebody who's getting that gift you created. I don't think I spend more than a day and month in the ministry of co-labor.
Uh-huh.
And it's very rewarding.
Yeah, those guys don't. You guys who have laymen in your area, they don't want much time in one way. They don't like a lot of supervision, let's put it this way. But boy, a little sharing with them, you get a lot of mileage out of it.
In Ohio, we have 25 lay couples from about 15 different cities who come in one day a month for a day long seminar, evangelism, follow up, and discipling. From 9 in the morning until 6 o'clock, even one day a month. And that's all they give to them. And then they're everyone producing, they're turned on, and we're going to do that indefinitely, one day a month. And they all give heavily. They everyone have people they're meeting with personally, and in Bible study and so forth. And it's really, we're really acknowledged of it. Just one day a month. All kinds of knowledge of it.
Ben?
Jerry,
define
what you mean by
Incidentally, the profile for layman's work is precisely the same as any other navigator work. Here's young layman's training team. Contacts who desire training and demonstrate this desire by their willingness to accept the standards determined by the team leader or prerequisites to training. In the case of young couples, the husband and wife are both committed to receiving training and to the objective of making disciples. That's a little skimpy, but that just to give a little idea of what the trainees should look like. Ministry co-laborers, again, are contacts who are looking to the NAS for direction and help, but due to age, calling, and or other circumstances, do not feel led and or qualified to train in the young layman's training team. And I think we try to make a distinction. We do the training with laymen in layman's pools of manpower, not in collegiate military. That's not a problem. It's just I think there are pools out there we can train and penetrate. These people are involved in a navigator-type ministry of evangelism and follow-up, and they've agreed to give us some of their recruits or their people that they're discipling for training. Many of them also will assume responsibility for career DMs that we'd like to give them. Then we have potential training team members, a little description of them. Then navigator co-laborers, contacts who are loyal to the navigators and are co-laborers in achieving the navigator objective primarily through prayer, gifts, giving their sons and daughters perhaps equipment in any other way they can help, services, so on. Well, is there any other comment on that? We might just wrap it up if there... Yeah, Bruce?
Question about the comment that you made
We have area reps in our territory who have special ministries. You know, as a general rule, the area rep is his job to say that the manager is fulfilled in his area. So any area rep will give some time, a little time, to some things that don't really give it much. But by and large, the bulk of his time will be spent on activities that will accomplish our objective.
Yeah. Probably it's an attempt to get away from just a general pastoral type ministry to laymen, which is very easy to get into. Right, I might add a couple of comments on planning and projecting. If the area rep can, and you have to follow your own style and so on, but if you can plan all the way through a ministry period and get the major responsibilities decided on, scheduled, and delegated, that takes a lot of pressure off. And so at the guys, the young team leader has responsibility for a giant area rally, and you expect 200 or 300 people out, or a banquet, or this family thing or something, then he's got plenty of lead time. And it gives opportunity for training. Then you can train and work with him on it. But if everything is done, you know, at the last minute and there's just, you did barely get by, why, training usually goes right out the window at first, and just doing it, it becomes primary. And I think I quoted from General Montgomery in here somewhere, he in his book, The History of Warfare, which doesn't make this true, it just illustrates it, but said that a good general has to plan at least two battles ahead. The battle he's about to engage in and the following. And the battle that he is engaging in at the moment becomes a springboard for the next one. And so what we look at a ministry period, and if our goals and objectives are achieved, we feel we'll be here as far as qualitative and quantitative objectives accomplished and what our area should look like this. It should have progressed. Well, if we're here with these kind of resources, then what other opportunities are open or what can we expand? And so I've got to be thinking, when I'm here, I've got to be thinking, projecting way out here, in some cases 2 or 3 years down the road, because for conferences and conference facilities and so on and new pools of manpower getting set so that when we get here, then it's quite natural to go on into the next phase. But you don't get here and then just stop everything and lose your momentum, lose all the, you know, everything begins to get shaky, and you sit and think, now where do we go from here? Because if people know where we go from here, then it's smooth, and they hardly even realize that it's the end of school year, or it's the end of the military year, or whatever. And they go right on through that period, make their evaluation, and go right on through. And they've been planning right here for things on out here. And we may be, because we have more team leaders, we can expand into new pools. And these guys are already primed and ready to go. And so we've got to, somehow, I don't care how we do it, we've got to be able to project. And some guys are more paperwork people, more are less structured, but somehow you've got to project ahead. To capitalize on momentum, capitalize on resources being developed. And again, vision, I think, and faith really enter in. Now, any comments before we close? Roger, you have something on your mind back there? Okay. All right.
One of the things I see is a tremendous privilege of hearing that. And I'm sure most of you...
You finished?
Yeah.
And I'm sure most of you see this, but an area rep has that a contact point doesn't have is you can just about restrict a contact point to the little pipeline in of evangelism, follow-up, recruiting his own men and training his own men. And one of the privileges an area rep has, I believe, is the... in a sense, he can recruit and train better men than he could when he was in his contact point. I know it's true with me. And I get all kinds of good men that I didn't recruit. And it's really a privilege to do that. And Warren gave you one illustration, but I can give you a very recent one. I have a guy in Ohio, a businessman in Akron, who's a ministry co-laborer, and some of you know him, Lonnie Willis. He was at the Glen several years ago with me in the accounting department. And Lonnie does a fantastic job in the business world of evangelism and follow-up and early discipling, not in training. He's not an excellent trainer. And he has at any one time about 10 couples in Bible study. Does a tremendous job of just following them up and helping them in the basics and so forth. Well, he kind of recruited one of the sharpest young couples I have ever met. And right about here, they were young disciples. We invited them with Lonnie's permission. He's thrilled to give us every couple he can. We invited them to move from Akron to Columbus and join our collegiate training team. And they had already decided in their hearts that they would like to be missionaries someday, and they'd like to get navigator training and maybe be at the navigators. And I mean, they're the keenest couple I've ever met. Well, they're in Columbus right now in our collegiate training team, and they're disciples when we got them. And Lonnie, you know, boy, we kind of have a little agreement that between he and I and God that they'll give us one couple every year, you know, like that. And we believe we're going to see this all over. And it's just like, you know, it's a guy like Dave Grissom who really got recruited by a ministry co-laborer. And more and more we're going to see this. And it's a privilege that an area rep has as his ministry grows and develops and his area grows that a contact point doesn't have.
Is that the collegiate training team with collegiate couples?
Actually, we have collegiate training teams, and then we have young layman training teams that are developing, but they're synonymous in the sense that it's a navigator training team, and we're trying to make navigators out of them. Warren is developing some layman's training teams where their pools of manpower are laymen, and then we also have training teams that are young couples on college campuses. They're basically the same thing. You know, we're trying to accomplish the same thing. We're trying to produce team leaders, contact points, nav reps, and flavors. But what I'm trying to emphasize that the area rep is placed in a position which is a tremendous responsibility of selecting, but it's also a fantastic privilege. Boy, we get couples just kind of funneled into us that it's fantastic. And so he really does have to select, and he's placed in a position where because he has more people at his disposal, he really does have to carefully select. And You know, that's a whole subject within itself, a subject of selecting. It's a fantastic privilege we have. And so after you're around for a while and after your area has developed, a guy like Hal Denny is very careful who he invites to join a training team. And it's a real privilege. And like the people in the training team, we have two young couples who came from two different cities. I just illustrated one of them, but we have another one. Both of whom gave up fantastic, they're in their mid-20s, they got fantastic jobs and careers, sold their house, both cases they sold their homes, quit their jobs, moved to Columbus, Ohio this year to get training on the training team. And so the kind of commitment we ask them to make is much greater than like the ministry co-laborers. They don't leave their city. They just continue to do what they're doing.
Are you running that? Who do you put them under? Who's actually your area?
Well, in Columbus, I've got my own group of lay couples, and Jim Fiker has got the collegiate couples. In Michigan, in Lansing, Bob Sparks has got the collegiate training team, and Hal Denny's got his own layman's training team, I believe. Is that right?
It's a team.
And Bob DeHaan, who at one time was a ministry co-laborer and who developed into the young layman's training team and then a young layman's training team leader, is now this past year moved to Purdue and is heading up our collegiate couples training team at Purdue, doing an unbelievable job. I mean, he's full-time there now. I was down there a couple of weeks ago, and they've got 40 couples, every one of them collegiate couples. They're keeping it on campus. They're not going off campus. They got about 40 collegiate couples involved, a total of about 80, that are not only in Bible studies, but who are coming out to rallies. And out of those 80, about 25 of the 80 are new Christians that have made decisions just since September. That's a fantastic thing. And Bob DeHaan was a businessman who gave up a thriving construction company business and came out of our ministry co-laborers in Michigan. So we're really trying to develop that thing, and out of that assume that some of those are going to be potential training team members and are going to come out of that and end up laborers. So we don't need too many guys like Bob DeHaan to really make it worth the time we give to it. Anything else you'd like to say on that one? Now, this illustration wasn't in your notebook. I don't think we even thought about it, but you can copy it down if you want. And
it really gives a beautiful vehicle to what Scotty was talking about, and turning it loose.
Yeah, we have no control over the Navigator co-laborers, very little control over our ministry co-laborers, but we do have defined, you know, what their relationship with us is and what the commitment is and how much time we'll spend with them and so forth.
I think, too, what we'd like to see is that red arrow, those red arrows that go out of the pipeline, that they stay within the ministry co-laborers. In other words, that they are doing the ministry, we keep
a
close contact.
Lonnie Willis, who's managing an insurance business in Akron, Ohio, who's a ministry co-laborer, boy, in his mind, he's a navigator. And in my mind, he's a navigator. We're very happy. I mean, you know, he gives and prays. And we want them to know that they're a part of our ministry, and we need them. And we expect them to recruit people to our work. And Lonnie Willis believes that God's going to give him men who are going to end up overseas with the navigators. You know, he's excited about that. They're, you know, some of them are fully trained. They've come out of this training team. They're fully trained. Others have never really gotten into it. But, you know, they're all happy, hopefully.